Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gigax and I'm here with Michael Brazemley.
Hi everyone.
All right, and today we are going to go through the mailbag once again because these episodes are easy to do and you guys give us really good questions. Or in some cases, really good corrections, which is what this first thing is.
And then when it comes to that, we talk a lot.
Yeah, that is true. It gives us an opportunity to talk and share our own views and whatever. And you know, whenever we do an episode like this, they're kind of evergreen, and I don't know when they're going to be released, because we're recording this 2 days before our election results, and we're probably going to have a lot to talk about after that happens, and so who knows when this...
Yeah, this is like part two on September 29th.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so when we release these episodes, or when we record them, ever since the settlement out of Buffalo on the... What David Grosskopf, what was that settlement that he got? Oh, on the geofence, or where you got a scanning integrity. Right, and we had just done mailbags on that, and then he got... Go ahead.
So there was a episode that Alan put up last week, I think, where we talked about stuff that was like a month ago.
yeah, exactly. And things had changed.
And it was a mailbag where somebody was asking about how to file this grievance, which means it's a month later. It means you've already filed that grievance.
Well, yeah, it's too late for that person, but other people
can learn
from
it. Don't use us to file grievances if it's going to be...
Well, or call Michael if you need that information right away.
Otherwise, if you need to go right away, then you need to call me.
Yeah, okay? Yep, exactly.
Because otherwise, if you send it as an email, we may not be answering that for like a month later.
Right.
In which you're not getting the information a month later, which may not be good by then.
Right.
So, but if you need to get help right away, just call me at my number at 702-724-6355.
Nice. Yep. And Michael absolutely answers and will give you very good answers.
Text first.
Questions. Yeah, there you go. Otherwise, he'll assume it's a telemarketer, as we all do.
Because I get so many of those.
Yeah, I hear you. So anyway, this issue with the scanning integrity, like we had gotten a mailbag question and we answered it to the best of our ability, but we don't have this grievance settlement that they just got that was, you know, made a big splash. And so I was worried about that. Like, so bear in mind when we're recording this, if something crazy happens between now and then, hey, nothing we can do about it.
Yeah, we're sorry about that. Yeah. We're doing the best we can. Yeah. Just, we can't post everything all at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so... The first thing is a correction. So I had an episode on diet colas and class warfare. And in that, I talked about how we're all getting shafted because the full cola, or what Renfro would have us believe is the full cola, is only like actually 55% of the cost of living. And so we're all boned. Even if you get the full amount, it's still not the full amount.
By the way, this cola that we've been getting, it's been like that for last 12
years. Yeah, it's been that
way
indefinitely. Yeah, forever.
And it's been crap.
Yeah, right. And the wage increases are supposed to make up the difference. So I go over that at length in that episode. But it turns out I made an important mistake, because what I said actually only applies to table two, where if I get, let's say Michael is at step L and I'm at step P, and now we're both on table two because of the new contract. So at step P, I get $1,000 and Michael only makes 80% of my salary. So Michael gets $800, or, you know, he gets 80% because it's proportional. We're both getting an increase of 1.2%. And so my increase is obviously going to be a little bit bigger because my salary is bigger. The clerks, on the other hand, have a deal where whoever is at the top step, if they get $1,000, then the person at step B also gets $1,000. And that's really helpful for the people at the lower steps to bridge that gap and to come up faster. Well, the person who sent me this email, Jeremy S., thank you very much for sending this. It turns out that table one had that same provision. And so Jeremy sent me this this article from the NALC that says that that this cola, this particular cola that he sent me, was $790, and it says this increase was added to every step in table one. Every step in table one got $790, and step P in table two, and then applied proportionally to steps B through O in table two.
Means everybody on table two got screwed.
Yeah, because on table one, everybody would have just got $790, and obviously that's better. And so, dude, it's even worse than I thought.
Yep.
I mean, I knew the situation for table two, but I didn't realize that we had gotten that other benefit taken away.
I'm on table two.
Yeah.
So yeah. Wait, I'm getting screwed now.
I just happen to be at the top step, but now I'm on table two also. But it doesn't mean anything.
Why are you on table two?
Because in the last contract, it said that everybody who's at step P in table one will be administratively slotted into step P at table two.
But you're still
the same
P,
amount
though.
Of money. Yeah, I'm still top step.
So you're still getting the $790.
Yeah. Yes,
so
I am.
Yeah. So you're not getting screwed at all.
Only in the sense that we're all getting screwed because they're all Diet Colas.
Right. But well, that's yeah. true. They're yeah. all Diet Colas because I'm right. sure that 790 divided by 12 is only like, what, $80?
Yeah.
$75
right.
a month? And
yeah.
a paycheck? $30 a paycheck? It's not a lot.
No, we all know that. Yeah,
$30 we may pay buy you
are not,
lunch.
Right. The wages are not where they need to be.
Yeah.
As long as you don't go to Five Guys.
Yeah.
Okay. So now I want to get to some emails. And so here we go. Hi, hope you are well. Question. I'm an ODL carrier on the overtime desire list. There's two in total, counting me in our office, of 15 city carriers. No CCAs or PTFs, all regulars. All right, so two ODLs, 13 8-hour carriers, presumably, or could be work assignment, whatever. Since that's the case, we ODLs work Sundays, but we have a rotation. One Sunday is me, the next is the other ODL carrier. Lately, management wants both of us to work every Sunday. The thing is, I have my religious meetings every Sunday. I understand as an ODL carrier, we'll be put to work on Sundays, holidays, our non-scheduled days if needed, and I've been doing so with no complaints. But Sunday is where the issue is rising. I told my supervisor about my religious beliefs and the importance for me to go Sunday to my religious meetings. I clarify, I am already working with management on a rotation, a working rotation of Sundays, but I can't do every Sunday. I mentioned, why can't they put another city carrier who's not on the ODL to help the ODL? The supervisor seemed hesitant. So I'm going to break out here to address that. No, they can't take somebody who's not on the overtime list right. and work them Sunday. That would be a mandate, and that would absolutely be inappropriate. Okay, so moving on. He said he'll try to work this out. In case they try to force me to work on Sundays, I plan on talking with the postmaster. If that does not work, I plan on filing an EEO. What are your thoughts on this? Even if it's temporary, both ODL working Sundays, I still clarified I can't do it every Sunday.
He's a PTF?
No, full-time regular.
Full-time regular.
Full-time regular, but on the ODL.
On the ODL, how many ODLs?
Two.
Only two ODLs.
Only two.
So every,
in
so
a 15
all
route,
ODL,
15 carriers.
So all ODLs have to work on Sunday?
Yeah.
Get off the ODL then.
Yeah, you could do that. You could go to work assignment. Mm-hmm. You could, well, dude, I mean, we've got the new list mm-hmm. where you could do overtime on your scheduled days, but have your non-scheduled days to yourself.
Right. Then, yeah.
This is a good solution
to
for
not
that
work
problem.
On your days off.
Right.
And then when
yeah.
they do, that's a grievance.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and then but then you'd be one of 14 mm-hmm. carriers who might be rotated through on Sunday.
But again, that is a rotation, so you'll
instead
get...
Instead of being one of two.
Exactly.
Right, but it sounds like this person is willing to work some Sundays, just not every Sunday.
Again, if you're in rotation, you'll be working only some Sundays, not every
right.
Sunday.
Yeah. Dude, the overtime only on your scheduled day list mm-hmm. seems like the way to go here.
Yeah. So
you might lose your
so
other day
So here's the thing
off.
Is, yep. is that... If overtime is more important, then that's what you do. But if church is more important, then you get off
right.
the overtime list.
Yeah.
Okay. So it is kind of up to you.
Yeah. You kind of have to decide what's more important, mm-hmm. having that other day off, working that other day off, say working your Wednesday off, mm-hmm. or being off on Sunday. Which
right.
one do you want more?
So it is on this, that's going to be a your option. Okay.
Yeah.
On what's more important for you?
Yeah. Yeah. That's okay. a really good point, Michael.
Yeah.
Okay, that is not the answer. This is why I love doing this with Michael, because mm-hmm. I already had an answer in my head that I had prepped for, and then Michael came up with a much more straightforward solution. And so, yeah, Michael, you are exactly right. But since I already prepped for it, I think
okay.
this is something the listeners will find interesting
okay, sure.
about religious exemptions and working on Sundays. This is a Supreme Court case from pretty recently of Groff versus DeJoy.
Yeah, he came out like a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Something like that.
Yeah, I remember reading about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so this is a... I'm going to read this article about it, and it basically summarizes it. All right, here we go. In ruling on a case involving an employee of the U.S. Postal Service, the Supreme Court of the United States made it clear... They call it SCOTUS going forward, the Supreme Court. made it clear that employers can no longer avoid granting employee requests for religious accommodations on the basis that granting the accommodations would cost them more than a de minimis amount. So a de minimis amount would be like, it really doesn't cost you anything extra to have one person work versus the other, or to give them this day off or whatever it is. So now saying that it costs us a little bit is no longer an acceptable reason to to not accommodate someone's religious request. All right, going on. The case was brought by USPS employee Gerald Groff, an evangelical Christian and former missionary who worked as a substitute letter carrier. He had refused to take any Sunday shifts and was disciplined for it. Eventually, Groff resigned and subsequently sued the USPS. His lawsuit claimed his employer had violated Title VII of the Civil Rights Act in not granting his request for religious accommodations. SCOTUS raises bar for denial of religious accommodation, clarifies the meaning of undue hardship. The High Court's decision said that employers must provide reasonable accommodations for its employees when religious observances conflict with the job, with their job responsibilities, unless the accommodation imposes an undue hardship. So now that's where the standard is, to go out of the article for a sec, is it used to be just anything more than a de minimis amount, and they could say, you can't do it. Now the post office in this case would have to show that it puts an undue hardship on the post office. Like, take for example, when I first started, I was a PTF. I worked at the strip post office. We only had like 12 routes and I was the only PTF. And so in order for me to have Sunday off, they would have to force in some regular carrier, and that would be probably an undue hardship, because instead of paying me my regular pay, they'd have to bring somebody in double time, whatever it is. But in the situation of, well, I don't know. I mean, this person.
Actually, you see, yeah, on that, I take it the other way.
Okay.
Undue hardship to me means that the post office has to do it as an emergency. Because in reality, you can still pay people extra to cover somebody for religious activity.
Yeah, that's a question, right? It becomes an argument over what constitutes an undue hardship. Yeah.
And to me, that's not undue hardship for the post office, because they have the money to mandate carriers and things like that all times.
That would be part of the argument for sure.
Yeah, so therefore, there is no undue hardship.
Because this is clearly money they're willing to pay for their own incompetence.
Exactly. So to me, there is no undue hardship.
Dude. Michael's so good at this stuff. Yeah, that's good, quick thinking. All right, so go on. It goes on. The justices also
This is what we talked about from the previous episode. It is management's responsibility to properly staff. So if there is enough people to cover everything, they need to hire more people.
Right. And to go back to when I was a PTF on Sundays, we would go to like this centralized location. Back then, we just did expresses on Sundays. Mm-hmm. Theoretically, they could bring in a PTF from some other station that has extra and have them cover the shift and give me Sunday off. Mm-hmm. And that wouldn't be an undue hardship. But the justices go on to reinterpret the meaning of undue hardship and held that Title VII of the Civil Rights Act requires employers who deny religious accommodations must show that the burden of granting an accommodation would result in, quote, substantial increased costs in relation to the conduct of its business, end quote. So there's your standard now, substantial increased costs. They could probably argue that paying somebody overtime instead of straight time would be that substantial increased cost. But that's
again, probably about... they can hire somebody else.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but hiring a whole other person would also probably constitute a substantial increased cost.
It is them to properly staff to cover people going on annual leave, sick leave, religious thing, or whatever it is. They're supposed to hire enough people to cover all of that. That is why there's such thing is called CCAs, City Carrier Assistance, to help out the carriers because of that reason.
Right, right. Okay? That's why CCAs exist. If there are CCAs in your installation, they could easily be used. Yeah.
But again, why doesn't this station have CCAs?
That I don't know.
Oh, maybe because they're not properly staffing.
Yeah, that is entirely possible.
Because from what they have, they should have a minimum of 2 to 3 CCAs.
I don't know. Right. I can't speak to that. I don't know the situation there. But the point is well taken. Mm-hmm. That management probably does have other options that they can work with you. And this Supreme Court case gives you more ammunition, more persuasive value to try to make those arguments, because they have to show an undue burden.
And the biggest thing is that you have to make that work with your steward or your a branch,
right,
and how to fight this, because Mazda will fight the not giving you the time.
Right, they're not just going to automatically give it.
So you got to figure out a way with the union, with the steward, how to file this grievance when they're not going to give you the time.
Yeah. Yep. Agreed. All right. Moving on to the next email. I saw recently that we are losing Amazon permanently. Can you share your thoughts on the podcast about postal banking, courier and copying services, and the purchase / exclusive carrier for eBay as all as revenue streams for USPS? So first, let's talk about losing Amazon. So it's probably an inevitability. Certainly in urban and even suburban areas, Amazon is building out their delivery fleet. We know there's already some cities where they do all their own.
The history is when I first started as a CCA, there was no Amazon delivery. Okay, it was almost a year later that we started having that Amazon contract and had to deliver Amazon. And we were strictly, basically the only ones delivering Amazon at the time.
Right.
Then they ended up getting UPS and FedEx and be involved in it. Mm-hmm. And then they decided to get their own trucks.
Right.
Okay. So we've had many, many news that Amazon is doing everything in their power to do their deliveries on their own without anybody else.
Right.
So we know this is happening.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. So in cities, it's probably just a matter of time. Like here in Las Vegas, they already have a bunch of distribution centers.
Yeah.
They got a bunch of trucks.
Yeah. Me and Alan talked about it earlier. Rural areas might be different, but since they're working on using drone delivery, who knows? They might be doing that for rural also.
They certainly might. Yeah. Yep. So it seems like an inevitability. Mm-hmm. And so it is a big chunk of revenue and
that we're not making too much of.
No, we're not making a bunch of money on it. Mm-hmm. I don't believe the conspiracy people who say like we're losing money on every Amazon package.
No, we're not losing money on Amazon.
Because they bring it all the way to the dock.
Yeah.
You know, but it's still something that you, as a carrier, you need to think about for your own route. Is if you suddenly get like 30 less parcels every day.
But the post of it in the meantime should be charging Amazon for more money in the meantime.
I'm sure there's a contract that...
I know there's a contract.
Yeah, why don't we have Doug Tolino negotiating that contract? Because he sure got one over on us.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe Amazon has better negotiators than the NALC does.
Maybe. I think we have the right people in the NALC. We just don't use them.
Oh, yeah. I hear you. That's the problem with being a go-it-alone type person like Renfro is
okay. He has plenty of good, smart people in his office. Dude,
I want to digress on this for just a sec because I talked to a carrier who was part of this rank and file committee who got flown into the, you know, for those meetings.
Washington, D.C.
Yeah. And went to the Maritime Academy and did all this. And, you know, what is it seems like Renfro is saying the right things now. And seems to understand.
He did that even before the tenant agreement came out.
Yeah, so this is the problem, right? Yes, it looks like Renfro was saying the right things, and I'm of a mind to try to give him the benefit of the doubt. But yeah, as Michael points out, he was saying right things last time too. Mm-hmm. They just weren't true.
Right.
And so, yeah, he's putting on a good show. They're like, oh, we're going to listen to the carriers and see, you know, what's the best contract we can make.
But because of what he did last time, how can we believe anything he says?
That's the problem, is I don't trust him. Mm-hmm. It's show. It's theater. Mm-hmm. You know, until proven otherwise, because he already showed who he was with the last contract. Mm-hmm. So this is theater until proven otherwise.
Right. Which he's the reason why he decided to change the contract to end in May.
Oh, yeah. So that he can
take the next over one before, and maybe to maybe he will actually change it and make it good.
Maybe.
It's crossing fingers.
Obviously, that's what we all want.
If he does that, then
we want him to crush it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll still vote for James Henry, but at least he can go out a winner. Renfro can go out doing something good.
Show us that he's for the carriers, because he hasn't shown it that much at all.
No, he's not. Okay, so anyway.
Though he has gotten some good decisions for us.
His presidential ruling is top-notch.
Yeah.
All right. I bet you our president would disagree with that, our local president. He doesn't like him at all.
Well, when he's breaking the rules, of course not.
Yeah, when the rulings are that obvious. All right, so anyway. So the question again is, what are our thoughts on postal banking, courier service? I really like the idea of postal banking.
Yeah, banking I think is good.
Yeah, because there are underserved communities, there's mm-hmm. underbanked people, people who really need those kind of services from someone they can trust, mm-hmm. and not having to go to the shady check cashing places.
And stuff having like banking that. Where even our own employees of the postal service yeah. used our own banking. Why not?
Yeah.
Why absolutely. Not have the postal save hold onto the money that they give to their employees and right. use that for banking?
Right. So that seems like a reasonable idea to me. Mm-hmm. The idea of getting like a monopoly on eBay,
yeah.
it's a nice yeah. idea.
But, here's the thing.
Yep.
The post office is supposed to be a non-profit organization.
Right.
Okay. So it makes it really difficult to do banking to make any profit because banking, they're supposed to make profit, right?
Yeah, but that's part of the idea.
So it makes it extremely hard. So, but if post office can actually have banking without making huge amounts of profit, enough to pay the employees,
right.
enough to pay for other things, and I think that'll be all right.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why I think everything will be cheaper.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because yeah. the idea would be that we're doing banking without this huge profit motive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's better for the consumer, especially better for people in poorer neighborhoods who can't afford to pay monthly fees for their checking account and stuff like that. I've been that person. I've been overdrawn. Back in the day before online, like mobile banking, I had to check to like go to the ATM, put in my card, see how much balance I had. Hopefully it was over $20 so that I could withdraw. Otherwise I was screwed. Yeah.
That's what it's like being poor though.
Yeah, dude. I got plenty of experience with yeah. that. All right. So anyway. So yeah, I'm in
having
favor
a
that.
Courier service and things like that. That courier service is already doing it already.
And that market, okay. that field is kind of swamped mm-hmm. at the moment. Courier service.
Mm-hmm.
What I like is this floated idea of maybe doing census work. And I think somebody showed me a news story this morning that it's being tested in some areas.
Having the post office do census work?
Yeah, because we got to go to every door.
Maybe. And
yeah.
But but are they going to have the mail carriers go talk to those people?
Yeah. Yeah, we would go like knock on the door, fill out the questionnaire. I don't know what census workers do.
I say good in the fact that we'll have more time and job for that.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. More so revenue for the post office.
More revenue for carriers to have more job.
Yeah. The question is, does it come with a pay
raise?
Sure,
why not?
Right.
Yeah. But I hope that they're not going to add that to our job and say, oh, you can still do that in 8 hours.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Go knock on these 71 doors and be done in eight.
8 hours. Yeah.
And we got a split for you when you get back.
Yeah.
Good times. Okay, so now we get into one that's a little more interesting. They're all interesting, but this one is, well, you'll see. What advice can you offer a steward in navigating workplace beef between two carriers? I've seen this crop up occasionally, and I find myself walking a tightrope every time. I've seen clear-cut cases in which one carrier is definitely in the wrong, but most of the time the poor behavior is on both sides. When possible, I've sat the two parties down without management present and been successful in resolving the bad blood. More often, the animosity becomes such a problem that management must intervene. In these instances, management conducts separate interviews with the two carriers and the steward present. My question is how to best represent both these discussions with management without throwing one carrier under the bus. I always endeavor not to invite discipline or worse on any carrier that I represent. I'm curious to know your thoughts on this.
First of all, before he goes to management, yeah. He should be dealt with privately and use the steward as like a mediator. Okay,
right. Which is what
to
the,
me,
what the
I think that should
said.
Be done first.
Yeah, that's okay? your best option, obviously.
If
take
that
the two
is
people.
Not working, yeah, then you ask the branch.
Okay.
Okay, and how that
what
works.
Do you ask them? You ask them for advice on how to mediate this,
right?
Okay. Okay.
Because in reality, as a steward, you're doing everything possible to stay away from management. Okay. Now, if it becomes a hostile where somebody's like saying they're going to beat you up or something right. that's going to be, sounds like it's going to be physical, now that becomes management's responsibility to stop that from happening.
Right. Okay?
And that needs to be reported immediately. Okay.
But yeah.
I know you don't want to rat somebody out, but if somebody's threatening your life, you got to say something.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's reasonable going to the hall. Like if you can't mediate this, mm-hmm. maybe the branch president can.
Right.
You know, or somebody from the outside, yeah. something like
yeah.
that.
If you can avoid using management, I would try that first.
Right. And in case management does have to get involved and now you've found yourself representing both carriers,
yeah.
the move there.
If you have enough two or more carriers, I would say each steward or two or more stewards, then
yeah.
have
each
of them
person
take
gets
the
their
person.
Own steward.
Yeah.
And that may even mean contacting, if you're the only steward at your station, contact the hall, get them to send an outside steward.
Yeah. Get one of the officers
to come.
Too.
and represent one of the carriers. Yeah. Right, exactly. And that's what happens, as I understand it, in like mutual combat cases, or like there's a physical fight between two carriers and they both get put on emergency placement. One steward takes one carrier, one steward takes the other carrier, and they both do their damnedest to represent them against management, mm-hmm. not against each other.
And for a steward, a lot of times they'll ask you, what did management do to stop this from happening?
Yes.
Okay, right. So there's that issue too.
Exactly. Yeah, because you do have, ultimately, it's management's responsibility mm-hmm. to foster an environment of mutual respect.
Which I have a story on this.
Okay.
Okay. So I have a carrier that thought that I was sleeping with his wife.
Okay.
And so he came up to my case and decided he wants to argue and fight me at my case. Okay.
Okay. Do you want to set the record straight right here? Were you sleeping with that carrier's wife?
No, I did not. Absolutely not. Never did.
Okay.
And, but he thought that I did, you know, because he has issues with what's going on at home and did not blame it to the person that he thought that might be happening to, which was not true.
Okay.
And so anyway, he decided to come to my case and wanted to fight. Well, how am I going to fight somebody on something where I didn't even do?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Okay.
It doesn't seem worth fighting over.
No. Okay. So I'm telling him to just go back to his case.
Yeah.
Okay. He won't listen. He still wants to fight. So finally, we get to a point where we get into verbal argument because I said, like, get the fuck away from me, dude.
Right.
And because we're at work. I don't want to get fired because you want to start a fight for something that's stupid. Right. And so management finally decides to come by. And this manager says, well, you need to go back to your case. Did that carrier think? Do you think that person did listen to what she the supervisor said?
I doubt it.
No.
Yeah.
And so, and he wouldn't leave. He wouldn't leave. And you know what I did?
Tell me.
I said, hey, if you want to stay in my case, that's up to you, but I'm leaving. So I walked away and I told the manager, hey, I'm taking a break because somebody's taking over my case and I don't want to start a fight, so I'm staying away. Of course, the manager is going to say, oh, yeah, but please do that.
Yeah.
Because they don't want no confrontation either.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So some of it is you being smart about it and walk away.
Yeah, that's a good move. Okay.
And obviously, this guy is talking about somebody that's not him and it's the other two.
Right.
And unfortunately, sometimes people will not think straight.
Okay? No, that's true.
And I've had many stories where somebody slept with somebody's wife and so forth, and they get into like a fight. And I've seen that happen. Dude,
I don't need those kind of problems.
Yeah. So, you know, if those things you can't help if you're, those two people are going to do what they do. All you can do as a steward is how to stop it from happening.
Right. You don't want people to get hurt. Prevent it. Yeah. So ultimately, let's remember, our role as stewards is to mm-hmm. protect carriers. Mm-hmm. And so the first step is prevention, mm-hmm. which the person who sent the email rightly points out. You know, that's what I try to do first, mediate. Mm-hmm. If you can't prevent it yourself, you can get management involved and have them try to prevent this from mm-hmm. escalating, because ultimately it's way easier to prevent it than it will be to now defend both of those carriers from identical charges from management or whatever, you know, whatever it becomes.
Again, you're asking for help, not want them to try to fire people either.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You're right. And that's management's job, is to try to resolve the issue, try to correct the issue rather than be punitive.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right. Good job, us.
And another thing they can use is the EAP.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Right.
And so, you know, say, hey, this is stressing me out because these two people are doing this. You can contact the EAP and say, hey, I need help.
Yeah, dude, that's a good call.
And then the other thing is, because these two people are doing that, mm-hmm. it's none of your business.
No, that's true.
You can stay away from it.
Yeah, you could just let it go, right? Okay. Yeah, that's why I wear earbuds.
On something like that, maybe I'll go to a steward's, hey man, this is what's going on.
Right.
And you did what you're supposed to do by letting somebody know what's going on and then walk away.
Yeah, yeah, that is true. Sometimes people make their own messes and you know, you can only do so much to clean them up.
Exactly. Don't, you know, basically what I'm saying is mind your own business or something like that. Let them fight it out.
Okay? If you can prevent it, great.
Let them fight it out, not at fist, but let them talk it out themselves.
Right. And again, sometimes to that end, mediating.
It'll be fixed.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Sometimes people got to solve their own problems.
Exactly.
All right. So that's all we have for today. Guys, thank you very much for listening. Michael, thank you for coming and doing some more episodes with me. I appreciate it. And dude, good luck to, as people hear this, it will now be in the past. Yeah. Good luck to us
on
Wednesday.
So the next episode, I guess we'll know our results and we'll let everybody know what happened.
But by the time they hear this episode, that should already have been published.
Right.
And, dude, it's like time travel. So it's like Inception in here.
We'll see what happens. See what happens.
All right, guys. So thank you very much for listening, and we will catch you all next time.
Oh, I wasn't ready with the music.